and welcome to edition 185 of the NIF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast recorded right here in Norfolk, UK, and brought to you by our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. Sign up to the game by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. My name is sports journalist Michael Bailey, and in this podcast we are going to discuss all the latest Formula One news as well as your bits and pieces in tweets and social. Coming up, does Halo mean goodbye? Will it be so long, Jolyon, as Kubica slips nearer? And has Kyle's team got their hats in order?
Outstanding work on the puns.
You're very kind.
Always.
This is the first of our bite-sized podcasts this week, as we bring you our three pods in 3 days. And once you've digested this, we'll be back with our Hungarian Grand Prix preview and our Hungaroring predictions podcast. Joining me on the pod for tonight's F1 fun are, you've already heard him, NRF1 co-founder and my more than able deputy, Perry Hamilton.
Oh, I'm blushing. That's very kind of you, Michael. Thank you.
Blushing for the camera. And current Prediction League champion, Steve Rust.
Good evening.
How are you, Steve?
Yeah, not too bad.
Nice to see you. Now, those of you who are astute with your ears may have noticed we're not at Archant Towers, nor are we at Silverstone.
Or Pets House.
Yeah. I think we've got a whole plethora of places we should be. We'll have to come around my house at some point, won't we? I'd have to invite you around. We are at the Rushcutters Public House in Thorpe St Andrew, our home away from home. And I hope you don't mind all the background noise. A little bit of ambience to the Formula One chatter. That's the idea, anyway. Before we get stuck in, our British Grand Prix review, episode 184, from the start-finish grid at Silverstone, immediately after the British Grand Prix, is epic. I repeat myself 4 or 5 times on some points, but that's down to the editing, and I got a bit confused about what we had and hadn't recorded. But all in all, what happened there?
What a catch.
What are you saying? Wow.
That chap just fumbled that tray, juggled it about 3-4 times, and then caught it just before it hit the floor. There was nothing on it, which is a shame, but that was epic. He deserved a round of applause for that.
That is the kind of service you get here at the Rushcutters, juggling acts as well as drinks. So make sure you check out episode 184 from Silverstone. It was such a brilliant day. You can also check out nrf1.uk/nrftube. And you'll find our video of our time at the Silverstone Grand Prix, which I really like the video that we've done there. It's almost had 1,000 views, which for us on YouTube is unheard of. So go check that out. All the links will also be in the show notes. So get your ears and eyes on all that stuff. So this is the podcast where we catch up on the latest Formula One news. I'm sure there are probably 1 or 2 holes from last weekend that we'll try and fill. But there's a few bits and bobs that have happened as well. So let's get stuck into those, shall we? First of all, the big one, the Halo. The FIA have confirmed the Halo head protection will be introduced in Formula One from 2018. The teams have all got to get prepared for that, ready for that, yet no one seems to want it. It's kind of my general feeling. It looks like it's going to spoil so much in the pursuit of safety. And we've had this debate lots of times. We might as well have it again. Perry, would you like to start it off?
It's always a hard line, isn't it? You always want to find the fine line between safety and competitive, enjoyable, visually pleasing sports. I'll draw a parallel, as regular listeners will know, big NFL fan. And a number of years ago, the NFL introduced rules that governed hits to the heads of defenseless receivers and hits to certain areas and leading with the crown and the helmet, all things that were introduced to increase safety, head safety, as is the case here in Formula One. People complained then and said, you know, it will ruin the whole game, you're making it too easy. But actually, it's about relearning how to hit. Now, you still in the NFL have the same hard-hitting, great football that we've had previously, and no one really now would know the difference. Head injuries are down, form tackling is better, it's being taught correctly at the lower level, so it's trickled down into the grassroots, which is great, which is exactly what we want to see. Fast forward a year to 2 years, and if we've got 3 or 4 teams battling for the championship and 4 or 5 drivers all in the mix for the championship, no one will give a shit about the Halo. It's all about what happens on the track.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, it is all about what happens on the track and that. And I mean, there were a lot of people when we had the big rule change back in 2009 and the cars were fundamentally different. And there were people saying, oh, you know, they look ugly and all this and the other. We did quickly get used to that. And I think it will probably be much the same. But my sort of views on it are, I'm quite disappointed that they went that direction. I actually preferred the other option of the kind of the screen. If we were going to have something, if it was a case of that, I would have gone for that personally. it sort of seemed that that hardly got any testing at all. It seemed that it was the Halo that got the more of the testing, so I think that most probably was the preferred one.
It was like they gave it one go. Sebastian Vettel said it's horrendous, and then that was it. And that was like, oh, right, now we've got to confirm the Halo.
But let me ask you this. What protection does the screen provide over something like the Halo that overarcs across the head of the driver, whereas a screen just sits in front of it, so it doesn't provide any head protection?
No, well, the Halo doesn't fully cover the head. You know, there is still elements of where if a tyre came off, although they're designed to not actually come off now, but I mean, if something came off and came up and then down, the Halo wouldn't fully protect that, and neither would the screen either. But with the screen, because it's angled up, the thinking was is that it would push things up and over the driver's head.
When you see situations as we've had recently that we're trying to avoid, so with Fernando Alonso's car flipping, and it's even with we go back to Jules Bianchi, that wasn't something hitting and going and flipping over the car, that was an impact, a trauma potentially to the head. So if you've got a Halo with a line down the middle and something that goes over the top, I'm doing wonderful hand motions here that you can't see, but if you've got a Halo that goes in front of the face and over the top of the head, when that car hits something, you're not necessarily going to stop it completely, you're going to take a lot of speed out of it, because these are going to be very well engineered, they're going to be very rigid, that, you know, you're talking about asking the pinnacle of engineering on the planet to create these for motorsport, and they will create them so that they work. They won't just be a dog and pony show, let's nail it on there and tap it on because we have to. If it's going to work, it's got to be integral to the vehicle. It has to, or else it doesn't work. The vehicle doesn't work. So look for someone, you know, some of those top tier teams to actually look at ways of, all right, this thing's lumped on us now. How can we use it to actually increase our speed, not just have it as a burden? Let's make it integral to the car. But having a shield leaves the whole top over the top of the head exposed. And when you look at things like flipping cars, that's where the Halo really comes into effect. It provides an extra level of protection so that cars don't end up on their top with, I mean, our hearts were in our mouth when we saw Monaco and we saw it was Pascal nearly, you know, flip sideways into that wall. That Halo would have stopped his head. I'm not for the Halo, but I understand the decision that's been made.
Yeah, but then the hoop above the driver stops that, more or less. That's what it was kind of like brought in for. But why not a combination of the two, the screen and the Halo? Because the Halo on it alone doesn't offer side protection. It's a very small bit in front, immediately in front of the driver. If you got a car coming across, that wouldn't necessarily protect you, where the screen would. And my concerns with the Halo, from the driver's point of view, is a lost bit of visibility, because you've got this stupid post right in the middle of you. I mean, I think we put a post up on our Facebook page. I think that was probably a little bit doctored, but it does raise a point, you know. I mean, there are parts of certain tracks where you've got different gradients going on. I mean, you know what it's like driving in your own car. You don't always get the best visibility until you've got to the bottom bit of a hill or whatever like that. And when you've got a stupid post in front of you compared to an open...
I can't drive with one of them sat-nav things on my windscreen. That's too much in my way.
Actually, that's the same with me, because my work's vehicle, I have to have it to one side. I can't have it in dead in front of me.
Well, the tweet you're mentioning is on the NRF1 Twitter feed, at the NRF1. It was retweeted. It's originally from Taki Inui, looking up at Eau Rouge as a computer-generated, I think, image, and because, you know, it's straight up a hill, that big bit in the middle upper part of the Halo would be bang in front of your view, and you couldn't really see where you're going.
Well, they're going to... I mean, clearly, that stanchion that comes down the very middle of the car, they're going to put a camera in that. I mean, they must put a camera in that. And then you actually get a driver eye view, not sitting above their helmet and seeing their head twitching from side to side. You're going to get a driver's eye view from that stanchion. There's going to be cameras in there.
As long as it doesn't reduce the safety integrity of the device. Imagine that as a backwards thing. I mean, worth flagging up Niki Lauda's comments, saying, you have to make the right decision in such a situation. The Halo is the wrong decision. We are trying hard with faster cars and getting closer to the spectators to attract new fans to the sport, but this now is destroyed by an overreaction. I think the thing I've... Two kind of issues I've got, really. One is they've made, as I think you touched on, Steve, lots of other safety changes so that wheels don't come off. So there's a virtual safety car so people will reduce their speed, you know, are forced to reduce their speed. They haven't got an option. So Jules Bianchi couldn't have slipped off, which I think was basically the underlying reason for the accident in the end. So there are other ways of that they've tried to minimise those possible... And I just wonder if the Halo is basically trying to eradicate one type of accident. The problem is you can't have a safety device that only tries to eradicate one type of accident, because you'll just end up in a massive box. Also, it's open cockpit racing, and we are talking about the very top of a whole stream of series. So if you do it at the very top, are you doing it all the way down? Is IndyCar going to have this? Is Formula 4 going to have this? I mean, Billy Munger had a horrendous accident in Formula 4 earlier this year. You know, I don't know. Does that need to be looked at in terms of their crash structures? I worry that it's something that they got in their heads to do a couple of years ago, and I'm not sure necessarily it's still the right course of action. Of course, we're also in the point now, and I think it got mentioned on Twitter from Mark Springle, who said basically the halo has to come in now. He said on Twitter, it's out there now, so to speak. If a driver perishes and they don't use the halo, F1 will be done, heads will roll, which is a rather unfortunate use of words, but that's kind of the essence of it.
Well, I was just about to say to you, my concern is I disagree with that to an extent. Now, just because it's out there, if there's a backlash, you can take your time, step aside and say, actually, we're going to think about this a little bit more. We rushed in as a new, we're a new governing body, we're a new ownership, we've come in, we've done what we thought was right to make safe. There's been a backlash, let's take a step back. The problem they have with that is that the drivers have already come out and said, whatever makes F1 safer, we're on board. So the drivers aren't pushing back and going, there's no way we can drive with that on our car. That's a huge issue for taking this a step out of the service. So this is going to come in. The bigger problem with this is that once it comes in, you cannot take a step backwards from this. You cannot introduce something like they had those side winglets, if you remember those in the years ago. The side winglets, they looked ugly. Everyone had them. Therefore, because everyone had them, there's no competitive advantage. So they banned them. Get rid of them. Keeps the aesthetics of the car looking lovely. That's not a safety issue. Once you introduce something this drastic as a safety issue, you cannot take it away because you are actively endangering those drivers unless you have a suitable alternative.
Last word I think should probably go to a tweet again on our Twitter feed from Mark Gallagher, who tweets, of course, you could simply get rid of the driver completely. That would be very, very safe. I like the robo-race cars. Do you like the robo-race cars, Steve?
I've not heard of this. I was just glancing at your picture on your iPad. But it's very futuristic. Maybe the future of Formula 1 and how they look.
With no driver.
Well, first things first, before you see that as a race, you would potentially see it as a safety car. Driverless safety car, high speed, programmed corners. You can program the exact speed that it goes at once it learns the track. You know, all the time that there isn't a junior race series or a feeder race series running at a track, you have that thing running around and learning and learning and learning. Sooner or later, it'll be able to take everything. I mean, we are a number of years away from that, but it takes away from manned safety cars, which means it can actually go at a regulated speed.
But what happens when it becomes self-aware?
The lady in the bar like that one as well. We will have to see. I have absolutely no doubt we will come back to this. Primarily, the big thing is if the teams now think, right, we've got to integrate this into our car, they're not going to be able to take it away because it's going to be integral to the new cars we're going to design for 2018. We better move it on, shouldn't we? Robert Kubica, he is officially testing in Hungary. I think that just got confirmed a day or two ago. Renault are being slightly more open about what's going on now. We're going to see what his capabilities are like. He's going to actually drive a 2017 car, clearly, because that's what the test is about. What's riding on this, Steve, do you think?
Lots of rumours, lots of doubt about, Julian Palmer. I did see on one of the sites that a rumour was floating around that before the British Grand Prix, Renault had told Julian Palmer that his seat was safe. But I think it depends on how you read into that. Is that sort of safe for the rest of the season, depending on what happens come the end of the season? You know, how well you've done, maybe.
Well, let's be clear. It wouldn't matter who's in the car. If you can't get it onto the start grid to start a race, it's pointless, isn't it? Which is exactly what happened for Julian. I mean, we said it before, the luck he's had in recent races has been shocking, and we know he's got one more race at least to maybe prove what he's got. And it'll be interesting to see what they'll want from Robert Kubica. They're obviously going to be looking at how quick he is, I guess, primarily.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been was it about 2010, I think he was 2011 he was last racing. I mean, he's been racing ever since, and I suspect he wouldn't have lost too much. But I don't know. It depends whether they're just doing him a favour to help him get back into Formula 1. I mean, he might be cropping up at another team. I mean, he said recently himself that he's 90% certain he's got an F1 seat for next season, but that might not necessarily be with Renault.
I guess the question then would be, why would Renault be going to all the trouble of giving him testing if they weren't then going to stick him in the car?
But maybe he's paying for it.
Maybe he's paying for it. Yeah. Everyone likes the money.
Five races to go in the season, Kubica will be in that car. That's what I'm saying right now. You can take that as an official prediction.
Well, we do when we get into the mid-season break, we'll take predictions then. So yeah.
That's going to be one of them. Yeah. Maybe not five races.
They can change it, but definitive answer.
I will say the definitive answer is Robert Kubica will drive competitively a Renault this year on track in this Formula One season, and it will be for more than one race, because Palmer is not doing anything there. Yes, he's had some terrible luck, but even when he hasn't had terrible luck, he is a shadow compared to what Hülkenberg is able to do in that car. This is a works car. This is financially backed. This is well researched, and that engine is making leaps. That car is. I said at the beginning of this season, you look at Renault, they'll be a top five team by the end of this season. They're already qualifying sixth. They're running fifth, sixth. Nico Hülkenberg is running fifth, sixth in races. Palmer's down the back of the field. Even in quali, Palmer's down the back of the field. He's not doing well. What better way? And this is the cynic in me coming out now. I'm sure Kubica will be quick. I've got no doubt of that. But the cynic in me says, actually, yeah, you might lose some money by having Jolyon Palmer go. What about the money bringing Robert Kubica in will generate? The stories, the interviews, the exposés, the behind the scenes, the film rights, and all of that that will come in. And you will be heralded as not just the team, but the company. Renault, the manufacturer, will be the team that gives people second chances. They are humanitarian. There is big, big business in bringing Robert Kubica back to competitive Formula One. Renault will be the guys to do it.
The film rights. I hadn't thought about the film rights. The only issue, Ped, is if Robert Kubica...
What do you mean film rights? Adrian Brody's going to play him. That writes itself.
Yeah. It's all very well, but if Robert Kubica... I think it's supposed to be Kubica rather than Kubica, apparently. Kubica. If Robert Kubica comes in, Kubica. Well, Fernando Alonso won't end up at Renault then. And I think you predicted that, did you? Or you still half predicted it?
I've said that if Renault were competitive and they've got a seat next year, that Fernando could be a target for them. Who knows where Fernando will go? At this stage, I wouldn't be surprised if Fernando went to Indy and gave that a try. So that might work. But I think this has fallen into Renault's lap. No one else is going to be overpaying for this guy, so they're not going to be in a competitive market. They've got his loyalty. They've paved the way back. They'll have him at a dime, and he will be quick. He might not win races, but he will get them points, and they don't have to break the bank to do it. You'd have to break the bank for Fernando.
Would you be excited to see him back?
Yeah, I would. I actually quite liked him as driver. I mean, he had a bit of an unusual style. It was by no means smooth or anything, but he got the job done, and he was quick. He could overtake. He always sort of outperformed what the car was able to sort of realistically do. I always liked watching him. It'd be nice to see him back, but I wouldn't want to see him take Jolyon Palmer's seat.
Oh, support for Jolyon. I like that. A quick word as well. Sauber will be giving a test to Formula 2 driver Nobuharu Matsushita, who is a fan for both the Springall brothers. They're both a big fan of Nobuharu. So there we go. Mainly for his surname.
Let's not get this twisted. Sauber have just signed to have Honda as their engine supplier.
That's been put back now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It still doesn't surprise me that they're giving a test drive to a Japanese driver.
Maybe they're still trying to get it over the line. We'll see. There's quite a few bits and bobs. Kyle was swimming around with some rumours. We'll have to publish those rumours at some point, won't we? Also at Haas, confirmation over this week that Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen will stay at Haas for 2018 as well. Are we pretty lukewarm to that? Do we care?
Did we expect anything less, really?
Honestly, sir, I don't even think it registered with me at all. But
with that team when they first come in, I think a lot of people have forgotten they're even there now.
It's hard, isn't it? Second season syndrome in a way. I think they're the third to maybe confirm their lineup for next year, though.
Doesn't fill me with excitement, but then that's because change doesn't. The thing is that it's very American. It's very American sports, okay? We've started our season well, come in, we've hit strong, second season, we've settled in, and what you want, the key thing for performance, is consistency. So keeping your senior engineers, keeping their rapport with the race engineers and the team engineers and the car engineers and the drivers and the managers and the team seniors is all very important. So if you continue that and you build, everyone knows what to do, everyone knows how the business works, everyone knows how the building works. What are the rules for that company? You don't have to learn something new. You don't have to get someone else up to speed. What's the terminology? You know what the terminology is. You understand the codes used on the radio. It's consistency. And ultimately, if you're patient, consistency will win you, in this case, races. Championships, who knows? But if they're consistent and they're willing to put the money in, that's the problem with Formula One. It's such an expensive sport that it really can be damaging to the patience you have to have to be successful can be really, really financially damaging. And if you're not willing to put that cost up, then you'll suffer.
I think that's half the point. It's worth pointing out as well, I think Haas have got about 140 employees for the entire team. Mercedes have got 1,700, 10 times as many people working on their car. Just absolute, that is mind blowing. Talk about the resourcing of Formula One teams. Money, absolutely nuts. Money,
money talks.
Absolutely. And finally, I just wanted to touch on Sebastian Vettel's tyre failure at Silverstone. I think it was confirmed it was a slow puncture, which is remarkable how they've worked out from a tyre that's completely gone that it was a slow puncture. But I guess they've got all that data that they
collect. Telemetry as well, wouldn't they? So yeah.
I shouldn't be that impressed, but I am impressed. And they still don't know what happened with Kimi's either, I think, so they're going to keep looking. And I think I've got that the right way around. Either way, those things probably came from Ferrari pushing it that little bit too far before they try and get out of it.
Yeah.
Right, let's do some plugs, shall we? To listen to our podcasts on your podcast player of choice and to subscribe so the podcasts get sent to you the moment they come out, just visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe and you'll find your link there, be it iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, Acast, or whatever. And the website has had some TLC over recent weeks, hopefully you've noticed. There are loads of blogs up there as well. We've got a series of them from Callum Springer, which are well worth a read. Richard Baxter has written a bit about Billy Munger as well, which is a cracking little read too. So check out all those, and I might even join in at some point when I get a spare second. It's my website, so I probably should. But you can see all those at nrf1.uk. It's well worth a look.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
So this is a time where we usually have tweets and social. As we said, we do love hearing from you. If you do want to get your audio in, you can just record it. Your rants, your questions, your predictions, comments, opinion, whatever you want. Just record it on your phone and you can send it to us by email at nrf1podcast@gmail.com, or you can go on to nrf1.uk and there's a red button that you can click on and that will record the audio for you. So always love to hear from you, of course. In terms of what we have had over the week, Kyle Cumbers, our dear colleague, he was in touch during the week because he went back to Silverstone for the tyre test that they had. I think it was only Williams and Haas who were in action. So Kyle A was enjoying some time with Lance Stroll, the walking weapon, also enjoying some time with Antonio Giovinazzi, and maybe most importantly, he remembered to take suntan lotion, sunscreen.
Did he not remember that for Silverstone?
No, we all got very burnt, very, and it wasn't even sunny. So I actually read up a little bit about that, and apparently, if the cloud is quite bubbly, it can actually deflect the UV rays and be worse than if it's straight sunshine. So you know, maybe that's what happened. But we all looked very red. By the time we got back to Norwich,
it was excitement.
It was that as well. But I think, by all accounts, Kyle had a cracking time watching the Haas and Williams cars back at Silverstone just a few days after the Grand Prix. It looked like there were fewer people there, as you'd hope. And fortunately, we'd all got off the grid. Otherwise, that would have been, you know, carnage, in truth. Mark Springle, I mentioned him earlier. Hello, Mark, in the podcast. But he also got in touch because he had a video of Ralph Boschung's crash in F2. Anyone know what was special about that crash at Silverstone weekend?
He walked away from it unscathed.
That was very special, and he didn't have a halo, so that was good. Anything else?
I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say that some reprobates were in the background of the video.
Well, we were. You wouldn't know it because it's just the crowd. But that crash, he came to a stop right in front of us. So I now know who it was who crashed because we didn't know at the time.
Did you get an interview with him?
No, I tried.
Like, you didn't just straight after he got out of the car?
No, I was like, Ralph! But he just kept walking. I think he was a bit embarrassed. There we go. A word for Mark Anderson. We mentioned him on the last podcast. He was worrying what was the issue with one of Sebastian Vettel's ears. He looked a little bit misshapen. So we're going to share those pictures, and you can check over the course of the Hungarian Grand Prix weekend to see if you agree with Mark.
Mark, you have too much time on your hands, my friend.
That's exactly the sort of stuff we want to deal with. Also, very random. We posted quite a few pictures and a couple of selfies from the Silverstone Grand Prix. And it was actually, one of those was picked up by someone on Twitter and is an artist by the name of Jules Artvan. I don't know if that's his exact name, but it would be good because he's an artist.
Does he sell his art from a van?
I hope so, quite possibly.
Awesome.
But basically, he saw the selfie, decided that my face was the one that lent itself most to being a watercolour, and then he painted it as a watercolour. And he shared that on all our various feeds. And the watercolour original is now for sale on eBay. So the question is, shall we buy it?
Yes! Yep. Clearly we should buy it.
Well, a bit of buyer then. We could. Well, no, what would we do with it?
Give it away to the winner of the prediction league.
Would they really want a watercolour of my face?
Who cares? They won the prediction league. We get to do what we want.
Okay. All right, then we'll buy it. Shall we buy it, Steve?
Yeah, but that might end up in my house.
Yeah, true. Well, do you want it in your house? Do you want a picture of my face in your house?
Ridiculous question.
Yeah.
Also, has he paid likeness rights?
I don't know. Do I have copyright of my face?
Yeah, mate. If an ape, if a monkey has, I know they're two different species. Before anyone starts to argue, but if a monkey has copyrights to its own face from a wildlife photographer, you have rights to your own face. Yes.
That's it. Is that true?
Yeah. That's the story. There's a wildlife photographer who's basically said his life is ruined because he set up this camera and the monkeys came and they learned how to click the shutter. If they clicked the shutter, they got food. So they were clicking the shutters and there's this famous shot of a monkey smiling down the camera. He sold it, but the conservation area have said that monkey's got the rights to that picture, not you. So all of the money you make from that picture has to go. And he's fought it in the courts and he's now financially ruined. That's a genuine story. I'm not making that up. That's true. 100% true.
Are you suggesting I should sue Jules for copyright breach?
No. I'm just saying, Jules, if you want to make a watercolour of someone, maybe just, you know, throw him a line first and say, hey, bro, I like your face. Can I make a picture of you?
Fair enough. I'm sure we'll do something with it. It's very red, so it does look like a sort of Game of Thrones. My head's literally been decapitated. Now looking at it.
That's that sunburn, isn't it?
Well done, Steve. Touché. We actually first saw that picture on our Instagram feed, and you can follow our Instagram feed too. The handle, like the others, is at the NRF1. Give us a look and a like, and we did some Instagram storying during the Formula One weekend, or the Sunday. It's unlikely we're going to be at a race anytime soon, but obviously if anything interesting comes along that we're at in future, we will definitely do an Instagram story with it. So there we go. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the handles are at the NRF1. Give us a follow, and as I said, the YouTube channel, you can take that in, is nrf1.uk/nrf1tube. And please get in touch with us on email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com. We love reading all your emails. I can assure you they all get a read. We're done then. That is the latest news, pretty much, although I'm sure there's bits and pieces we missed. Something probably broke as we recorded this, but we've got 3 podcasts in 3 days to do, so we better get on with them. So it's goodbye from the guests. Goodbye from Steve.
Cheerio.
Goodbye from Pet.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from myself. Thanks to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/nrf1, especially when the summer break comes along. You're going to have hours to while away, so get on with that. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We're hungry for hungry from here on in, and we'll quench that appetite with our next pod damn soon. The preview is on its way. Until then, goodbye.